If you will, please turn to John, the 13th chapter. The housewarming, by the way, you mentioned that, didn't you, about the housewarming? I wasn't listening, I'm sorry. The housewarming was a real blowout today. Man, it was great. They had people just running in out there like ants and bringing food and jams and jellies, and it was just great, and it's a beautiful place. If you haven't seen it, many of you have worked on it. Many of you from the school have, the students. Some of our members have worked on it from here. We've got some people. We're going to try to get up a list of those that did and express appreciation to them. But it was just a great afternoon. The last 18 hours of Jesus' life were filled with events of great importance for the Christian, things that show us a deeper insight about the life of the Lord. But back before the last 18 hours, some things of interest also take place, and let's use them to introduce us to the lesson tonight. Jesus came through Jericho and made his way on up to Jerusalem, went to the town of Bethany where he was staying, and on Saturday he ate a feast in the house of Simon the leper. Mary and Martha were there serving. Martha, it says, was serving, which is normal for Martha. That's what she usually was doing, was serving. She was a servant heart. And Mary was there, and I suspect Mary was sitting there. Well, Mary was doing something else. Mary was pouring oil on the Lord, ointment, perfume. Cost a whole year's wages. Judas went bananas. He just went nuts. What in the world's all this waste for? He could just see all of that money in his pocket. Jesus defended her. But that was on Saturday. On Sunday, the next day, Jesus rode into the city of Jerusalem on a donkey. And the people who had witnessed the resurrection of Lazarus and those who had heard about it rushed out into the streets, into the road, and laid palm leaves in their coats down. And there was this great triumphal procession, set the whole city of Jerusalem in an uproar. And the Pharisees and the Sadducees were just chafing under it. They heard them singing, "Hosanna! Hosanna!" And they said, "Stop these children. Don't you hear what they're saying?" Jesus said, "Well, you stop them and the rocks are going to cry out. And you and more or less just take your pick. Somebody's going to shout Hosanna today." And then he rode on in, and the road from Bethany into Jerusalem leads right into the temple. The gate is closed today. It led right through the Golden Gate. But about the 6th or 7th centuries, that gate was closed up by a Mohammedan for some reason or other. We don't know why. One of the prophecies in the Old Testament tells us that it would be shut up, and after the king had gone in, no one else would enter that gate. And sure enough, in about the 7th century, that gate through which Jesus Christ, the King of Glory, had entered was closed up by one of the sultans, and it's still closed. You can go over there today, and it's still closed up. But it was open at that time. He went into the temple area and looked around. I think it is Mark that says that. He looked around at the place. He went back home to Bethany that Sunday night, spent the night either on the hillside there or probably in the house of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. And then early the next morning, he came into the temple area and cleaned it out. And you're familiar with that wild scene. Money and coins running all over the temple area. Tables going this way and that, cattle lowing and the sheep bleating, and all this confusion and the people running here and there trying to catch their sheep and the oxen or the cattle or whatever they were offering, and people trying to perhaps catch their pigeons or whatever. It was just confusion. Jesus would not allow anyone to carry anything through the temple area. He tangled with the very heart of the Jewish economy, and the very heart of the Jewish religion on that Monday. The people, it seems, the Jewish leaders were so stunned they couldn't say anything. They just stood there aghast. He went home Monday night and came back Tuesday morning, and they had gotten up their courage, gotten their things back together, and they came up and confronted him. They said, "Tell us, by what authority did you do that?" He said, "Well, let me ask you a question." He said, "The baptism of John, was it from heaven or from men?" Well, they got in a huddle and tried to decide what they ought to answer. They said, "Well, we can't say it's from men. The people will stone us. If we say it's from heaven, he's going to say, well, why didn't you be baptized by him then?" So they came back and they probably appointed a spokesman. And he said, "Well, we don't know where it came from." Jesus said, "Well, then neither am I going to tell you by what authority I did that either." That was on Tuesday. Wednesday probably was taken up with the meeting or the people wanting to see Jesus, the Greeks, and his period of depression. Jesus was in a very deep period of depression. John, the 12th chapter, tells about it, and I think it took place on Wednesday. Thursday, though, the preparation, early that morning, Jesus sent his disciples, two of them, to make preparation for the feast. And then that night, late in the evening, as the sun was setting, Jesus and his disciples went into the upper room and began to eat the feast. And one of the most meaningful things that happened during those closing hours of his life on earth took place during the feast of the Passover. It's especially meaningful in terms of our looking at various aspects of the life of Jesus. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own that were in the world, he loved them to the end. And during supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper, laid aside his garments, and girded himself with a towel. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. He came to Simon Peter, and Peter said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered him, "What I'm doing you do not know now, but afterward you will understand." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no part with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "He who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, for he's clean all over, and you are clean, but not all of you." For he knew who was to betray him, and that was why he said, "You are not all clean." When he had washed their feet and taken his garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you know what I've done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for so I am. If I, then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I've given you an example that you also should do as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his Lord, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." We're introduced here to a quality of the life of Jesus that's very important. We see Jesus as a servant. Up to this point, we've seen Jesus as the child, the Christ child. We saw him as Jesus as the youth, Jesus the tempted, Jesus the storyteller, Jesus the mixer, Jesus the comforter. We see Jesus tonight as the servant, Jesus the servant. And it's so very important that we notice it, and I didn't see it at first, but I do now. This is the only one of all of those that we've studied that Jesus urges upon us to imitate him. He doesn't ask us to imitate him as a storyteller. He doesn't even ask us to imitate him as a mixer, not even as a comforter. There are no words really that urge us to go out and imitate him as a comforter. But he does, on this occasion, very strongly say to them, "I want you to do to others like I've done to you tonight." He asks that we imitate him as a servant. The occasion that prompted this action on the part of Jesus, this washing of their feet, provides a very dark background in the records of Jesus and his disciples. The thing that caused this demonstration was the argument of his disciples over who among them was the greatest. Now, John doesn't record this argument. John only records the incident. He records the object lesson that Jesus provided, the washing of feet, this serving, his kneeling at the feet of these men. But Luke, in Luke the 22nd chapter, does say that they were arguing. Arguing now, in the midst of all this glory of the occasion, in the midst of the grandeur, in the midst of the antiquity of this event, for 14 centuries the Jews had been anticipating the coming of the Messiah through the Passover feast. And all the memories and all the things that crowded around it. And in the midst of all of this that would be holy and would be noble and genuine and right and good, here these men are arguing about who is the greatest among them. Sad. It reminds me of ourselves many times, Christians, who in the midst of all of our heritage find ourselves bickering and arguing and squabbling over things that reflect really our eyes and our minds being on ourselves. But there's something more to it than that. The seriousness of the occasion is reflected by the fact that this was not the only time they had argued about this. This was at least the third time in I don't know how many weeks or months when they came, and this may have stretched all the way back for about 18 months, when they came down from the Mount of Transfiguration. The first time that I am aware that they were arguing was after they came down, came on through Galilee, and were coming into the city of Capernaum. When they got into the house, Mark says, when they got into the house, Jesus asked them, "What were you men talking about on the road?" And said they wouldn't say, they wouldn't answer him, because they were talking about who among them was the greatest. And so he sat down on that occasion and said, "Now look, those that rule over the Gentiles in the world, they lord it over them. And their great men, you know, show authority over them." And all of this, he said, it's not going to be like that among you. Well, a few days earlier than this event we're talking about tonight, down in Jericho, as they were coming to Jericho, the mother of James and John came up and brought the thing out in the open and said, "Jesus, I want you to do a favor for us. Would you let Jimmy sit on your right hand and Johnny sit on the left, please? They're good boys, and we'd love to have them in these places of prominence, if you would. Jimmy on the right and Johnny on the left. Would that be all right? Could you?" Jesus said, "You don't know what you're asking." And he went ahead and tried to show them there. He said, "It's not mine to give. Are you able to eat or drink the cup that I'm to drink? And are you able to be baptized with the baptism I'm to be baptized with?" They said, "Yeah, we're ready. We're able." He said, "Well, you will. You'll drink the cup and you'll be baptized with the baptism. But to give, to sit on my right or my left is not mine, but the Father's." The others were arguing. They were angry over it. They were indignant that that happened. Mark, the 9th chapter, I think, records it. Well, it looked like maybe that would have settled it, but it didn't. It came back up here. And they were still at it, still at one another's throat. We don't know maybe what caused it or what touched it off, but nevertheless, this was the scene that we find, in which we find Jesus serving as the servant of this occasion. The implications here are very strong. In fact, they're not to be left to just to implied. The implications are stated explicitly. Maybe it should be called the explications, but the implications, let's call them that. I want you to notice the first three verses with me. Do you have your Bibles? These implications are contained in the participles. And I spoke to some young people yesterday morning, and I told them, you know, may not know the difference between a participle and a bicycle. I don't know, but a participle is a word that acts in conjunction with a verb. And it's a shading or a coloring word. It's a word that provides backdrop and background. It's a word that provides enrichment. Those of you who have been involved in plays and in theater, The participles are the things that are provided by the prop man. They're the scenes. They're the drops and all that are used to provide the backdrop for an action of a play. The participles. Listen to these participles and listen to how rich and listen to what they tell us. All of these now are participles, and I'm going to translate them as they are literally translated as participles, which some of your translations probably do, but I want to make it consistent so that you'll know what it is which are the participles. Now, before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing these all that end in ing are the participles, knowing that his hour had come to depart out of the world to the Father, having loved his own that were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, the devil having already put into the heart of Judas, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going to God. Hear all these participles? Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, having loved his own that were in the world, the devil having already put it into the heart of Judas, Iscariot, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand, these provide the coloring and the shading and the warm, rich coloring in of the event that we're going to be noticing tonight. Notice what it tells us. These participles tell us that Jesus knew what was going to happen. He simply says here, knowing that his hour had come to depart out of this world. Knowing that his hour had come in the sense that he was about to die, he knew that. Jesus was conscious of it. In John the 12th chapter in verse 27, just back the chapter before, it says that his soul was so troubled that he just almost gave up. He said, Father, my soul is troubled until death. What am I going to say? Father, save me from this hour? No, for this purpose, he said, I've come to this hour. Father, glorify thy name. But all this whole, if you'll notice, from about verse 20 of chapter 12 on down through the end, down to about verse 36, the latter part of verse 36, Jesus actually went and hid. He was so depressed. He was so in such a state of almost, he was just incommunicado. People couldn't get to him. But he was aware that his hour had come. But it also says, secondly, that he knew and loved his disciples who were in the world. He loved them to the end. He loved them to the uttermost. That meant Judas. It meant Simon Peter, if it didn't mean Judas. But you see, Judas was in that group of men whose feet he washed. You thought he had already gone. No, Judas was still there. And when Jesus went around and washed the feet of those men, he washed Judas's feet too. You see, down in look at chapter 13 again, and look at verse 29 and 30. This is talking about what some thought after Jesus had told Judas, go do what you have to do quickly. Some thought that because Judas had the money box, Jesus was telling him, buy what we need for the feast, or that he should give something to the poor. So after receiving the morsel, he immediately went out, and it was night. It included Judas. Jesus, loving his own that were in the world, loved them to the end. But if it didn't include Judas, it includes Simon Peter. Look on over at verse 36. He knew what Simon Peter was going to do to him. He knew he was going to betray him. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, where are you going? Jesus answered, where I'm going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow afterward. Peter said to him, Lord, why can I not follow you now? I'll lay down my life for you. Jesus answered, will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, the cock will not crow till you've denied me three times. Jesus knew that, and he loved them in spite of it, and he did this deed of kindness, this act of service to them, in spite of the fact that these men were not worthy, really. They were arguing, they were going to betray him, they were going to deny him, but it says, having loved his own that were in the world, he loved them to the end. A third thing it says, he knew his relationship to God. Look at this verse 3. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going to God. Three things it says that Jesus knew about himself. First of all, it says back earlier, it says he knew the occasion. He knew his hour had come. Secondly, he knew his disciples and he loved them anyway, right on up to the end, fully, totally. And then thirdly, it says he knew some things about himself. He knew who he was. He knew these three things about himself. He knew his origin. He knew his present state of power, and he knew his destiny. He knew that God had given all things into his hands. He had a handle on all of it. Secondly, it says he knew that he had come from God and he knew that he was going back to God. He had come from him and he was on his way back, now he was almost there. He knew all of these things about himself. And he stooped down with this awareness and then washed these disciples' feet. I want to ask you a question. Did Jesus wash the disciples' feet in spite of what he knew that he was, or because of who he knew he was? Let me ask you again so you'll understand it. Did Jesus wash his disciples' feet in spite of who he knew he was, or because of who he knew he was? It was because he knew who he was. Now your answer will determine what you think about God. If you look at God as someone who among men is one who is standing around wanting to be served and who has the right to be served, and maybe he has the right, but he did not claim that right. If you look at God as someone who stands there with his arms crossed, you know, looking down his nose at you, waiting for you to do something wrong, you'll probably think that in spite of the fact that he was God, he served these men in their washing of their feet. But if you look at it as though he did it because he knew who he was, then you've got him showing us a God who wants to serve us and who longs to be our servant for us. I believe that Jesus served these men and washed their feet because he knew who he was. Now, because of the fact that this particular aspect of Jesus' life, that of being a servant, because he's asking us to imitate him, I'm going to draw three lessons from these observations tonight, which we've not really done before as we've observed his life, but I want to notice three particular lessons, the first one of which is this. When you know who you are, if you're kin to God, you're going to serve other people. That's just as certain as day follows night. When you discover who you are and learning whose you are, if you belong to God, you're going to serve other people. I'm convinced that it's the people who do not really know who they are that don't serve. I'm convinced that those who claim to be members of the church but don't really know whose they are, these are the ones that stand back and bicker and grumble and complain and stand back in loneliness and feeling like they're separate and alienated from everybody else. I suspect they're the people who don't really know who they are. And when the day comes that you, like Jesus, know that God really has committed everything into your hand, in the sense he said, I've lavished it on you and I'm with you always, I'll never forsake you, and you have come from me, you're my child, and I'm going to receive you to myself one day. When you learn all of that, and when I learn all of that, it will not be in spite of the fact that I'm aware of that I'll serve you. It'll be because of the fact that I'm aware of it. That's what makes a man serve another man, or a woman serve another woman, or people serve people. Lesson number one, when you learn who you are, if you're kin to God, you're going to serve. But let's look again. The second thing that's interesting about this is the divine action. And that's contained in the verbs. Look at verses 4 and 5 now. These are all verbs. The ones in verses 1, 2, and 3, all of these that we pointed out were participles. Those in verses 4 and 5 are the verbs. Listen to the action now that's set in this context. He rose from supper. That's a verb. Laid aside his garments, another verb, girded himself, a verb, poured water into a basin, a verb, began to wash the disciples' feet, another verb, and finally to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. Listen to these verbs. He rose from supper, laid aside his garments, girded him, poured water into a basin, began to wash and to wipe the disciples' feet. Now that was the action that Jesus performed. And so here it came. Simon Peter watching it. He was a bit uncomfortable, frankly. You see, and I don't want to assign motives to these men, but somebody goofed. Someone should have assumed the position of a servant with these men. You see, the one who was the host really wasn't there. He was downstairs with his own family. If he was eating the Passover at the same time Jesus ate it, he was downstairs with his own family eating the Passover. But ordinarily, a man being a guest in someone's home, the host would either wash the man's feet or would provide a servant to wash the person's feet or would provide at least the water and the basin, which was provided here. But somebody had not taken upon themselves to do the job of a servant. And I wonder who it was. Well, I don't know, but there was something here that wasn't right. They were arguing about who was the greatest among them, and I don't doubt but what it was this very occasion that caused them to argue. Perhaps it was Simon or some of the others saying, "You go ahead, why don't you do the work? Go on and get this thing going. Let's get our feet washed so we can eat." And maybe none of them would humble himself to do what he knew ought to be done. So here was this boil festering in resentment, alienation, hard feelings, and there they were sitting around the table trying to eat. Did you ever try to eat with somebody when you're like that? It gives you indigestion. And here, this was the scene. Did you ever try to eat while you were arguing? This was the scene. Something had to be done. So Jesus did it. He just simply got up, put a towel around him, and got the basin of water, poured the water into the basin, and went around and started doing what some of them should have been doing themselves. Simon said when he came to him, he said, "Lord, what are you doing? You're going to wash my feet?" Jesus said, "Simon, you don't understand right now. You'll know later." He said, "You're not going to wash my feet." Jesus said, "Simon, if I don't wash you, you don't have any part with me." And then Simon just kind of melted and said, "Well, all right, Lord, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." But Jesus said, "No, that's all that's needed is your feet to be washed. Once you've been bathed, all you need is to have your feet washed, and then you're clean all over." But we see something here. We see resentment that's confronted. We see a loving confrontation between Jesus and Simon Peter. Jesus confronted Simon and let him know that things weren't just right, Simon, and I'm here to do what I can to break it open and heal it. And Simon was caught out, you see. Have you ever been caught in something that you knew you were wrong in? Boy, here it comes. You know, all of a sudden you realize it, and it affects you in your chest. And then your face blushes, and you find that it's just really terrible. You've been caught. I think that's the way Simon must have felt. And you know what your reaction is? Well, you're not going to touch me. If I should have done something to you and I didn't do it, and then you come and do that to me or try to, I'm not going to let you do that to me. And it's humility in reverse. It's false pride, or it's false humility. It comes across really as pride. And I think that that's exactly what Simon Peter was showing to Jesus. And Jesus wouldn't let him get by with it. When he said, "Lord, you're not going to wash my, you'll never wash my feet." If Jesus had said, "All right, Simon, I'll come to the next one then," there would have still been that old festering boil of that shouldn't have been in Simon. But when Jesus said, "Simon, let me tell you something. If I don't wash your feet, you don't have one thing to do with me." And then it just broke him. He said, "Okay, Lord." I don't know whether my little girl is here or not, my youngest. I won't get to tell this if she's here, but I don't believe she is. I looked for her. Let me tell you. When she was about 11 years old, Rachel, our little white tornado, she's such a vivacious character. Beautiful. But, and just, you know, going in all directions. You have to have a fast lens to catch the action with her because she's already gone somewhere else if you don't hurry. And she got sassy with her mother one day, and she was up at the swimming pool and wanted to go swimming. She called home and said, "Mother, I want to go swimming." And Louise said, "Well, no, it's best not today. Come on home. We've got something else to do." And she said, "I don't want to do that." Bam. Boy, Louise, I was standing there. Louise said, "That child?" I said, "What did she do?" And she told me, "Well, I just got in the car, went down to the swimming pool, told her to put her bicycle in the car and come on home. We had some talking to do." And so we got home, put the bicycle out. I took her by the hand. We went upstairs. And I said, "Now, Rachel, do you understand why I'm going to have to spank you?" Well, she began to explain. I said, "Do you understand that you cannot talk to your mother like that? You just can't do that." Well, boy, she saw it coming, and I really laid one on her. And she was just broken. She was just torn up, but she wasn't broken. She was hurt. And there's a difference. She was hurt, but she wasn't broken. And she was going, when I had gotten through spanking her, she was going to get, you know, she had the bit in her teeth still. And she was going to go in there and flop down on her bed and just cry her heart out. I said, "Uh-uh, no, you don't either." I said, "You come and sit in my lap and let me hold you." "No." She was going, and I said, "Rachel, come here." And I took her in my arms, and she just said, "Oh." And she laid there as limp as a dish rag. She had been broken. And I sat there with her and held her and loved her. From then on, never anything but just beautiful. Boy, but it had to come. That's what happened here with Simon. When he finally let Jesus discipline him, when he let Jesus serve him and wash his feet, he just simply kind of melted like a dish rag and laid there and let the Lord serve him. Now, only then was Simon Peter ready to serve other people. Lesson number two, only when you let Jesus Christ serve you are you prepared to serve anybody else. How does he want to wash your feet? How does he want to serve you today? He wants to forgive you of sin every day. He wants to, you know, the washing of the feet, that's a symbolic thing. He said, once you've been bathed, that's your baptism. Once you've been bathed, you only need to have this daily washing of your feet. And that comes about by simply bringing your sins every day to the cross and letting the Lord, out of his own mercy, just say, I forgive you. Come on, we've got work to do. I'll wash you. I'll clean you. But you know what sometimes we do? We don't let the Lord serve us. We refuse to be served like that. We'll just say, no, I'll do it myself. I'll get out and do my own work, and I'll do better tomorrow, and I'll work harder. Wait a minute, he doesn't want that right now. He wants you just to sit still and let him wash your feet. He wants you to let him serve you. And if finally you ever say, well, all right, Lord, not just my hands, my feet, but my hands and my head as well, whenever you just kind of melt in his arms and let him serve you, then you're prepared to go out and serve other people. Not until. And you tell you one thing, if you ever go out trying to serve others before you have allowed Jesus Christ to serve you, it won't work. Because you're going to be hard, you're going to be judgmental, you're going to be in a way that's just not right. That has to be broken loose. And the only way it can be done is by letting the Lord Jesus serve you. And he says, if you don't let me serve you, you don't have any part with me. Well, finally, and our time is gone, but let me mention one final. The application is clear. The implications were strong in these participles as they laid the groundwork for us, and we see the backdrop. And then the divine action that Jesus did was very clear. We see him taking off his garment and clothing himself with the towel and doing this service to his disciples. And then finally, the divine application is so clear because Jesus doesn't just leave it to be implied. He makes an explicit application of it. Listen to what he says in verse 12. When he had washed their feet and taken his garments and resumed his place, he said to them, do you know what I've done to you? Now watch what he's asking. Well, they could have said, well, Lord, yes, you washed our feet. What's the matter? We know what you did. But that wasn't what he was asking. He was asking, do you know what I have done to you behind what I did? Do you understand the implications of it? And then he says, here's what I'm talking about. You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do as I've done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. If you do these things, if you know these things, happy are you if you do them. I think the key word in this is this. For I have given you an example that you also should do as I have done to you. How do you go about serving people? Do you ever think about it? How do you go about serving? Sometimes we don't know. Jesus tells us. And it's simply in this simple formula, don't do to anybody what Jesus of Nazareth has not done to you. Or putting it in the positive, why don't you do what Jesus says here and go out and do to other people like he's done to you? And you mean that's what service is? That's right. That is service. Doing to other people what Jesus or God has done to you. That's why it was so necessary for Simon Peter to allow Jesus to serve him. Because only when Simon Peter had been served by Christ in this self-abasing or self-negating way to get him out of the way, only when he had been served like that was he able to go out and serve anybody else like that. So, as I said at the beginning of the lesson, no other aspect of Jesus' life, except that of loving, which covers a lot, but no other specific aspect of his life, as we've studied, does he explicitly and pointedly tell us that we must imitate other than this one of service. And he teaches us these three lessons. If we know who we are, if we're God's, we're going to serve other people. Second, if only and if we allow Christ to serve us, are we prepared to serve anybody else? And then when we do to other people what God has done to us, only then do we know how to serve other people. Jesus the servant. Oh, he's a beautiful character. Aren't those, and this and that's, as you know, as you read his life and all, these are just very few, some of the very many, many, but few of the very many, many things about him that's so magnificent. And so he comes tonight to serve us. Will you let him? Will you let him serve you? He wants right now to forgive you, to cleanse you, to heal you, to comfort you. He's ready to do all these things for you if you'll let him. But it takes humbling yourself to do that. Tonight, we want to sing this song of encouragement. There may be somebody here tonight really hurting. You may want to come and you may need some service. Would you let us serve you? Would you? There are a whole lot of us here that would be able to serve you. And every one of us at some time or other needs serving as well as being served. Or needs to be served as well as to serve. Would you let those here tonight who are ready to serve, serve you if you need serving? That's part of it. Will you humble yourself now and let's serve one another while we stand and sing?